start the show.
For Thursday, June 20th, 2019, welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. All is right in the world.
Where is my dubstep intro?
Oh my god.
Did I just clip?
Blowing things out.
Like Will did last week.
Oh, well, you got no dubstep intro, but we have the full squad back. Not since our episode 501 spectacular have we had Jeremy, me, and our sweet quiche. Kari Watch 2019.
I thought we made a deal that this show was over.
After 501, we all shook hands, went our separate ways.
We all gave each other that look. Like, that was a good run.
You know, the people demanded more. Soft reboots, sequels are always a thing.
You remember how this works?
I don't think I ever knew how this worked in the first place.
Well, Kishore, thank you for coming back. It's a wonderful to have you back. And we'll get caught up. First of all, how's everyone doing? How are you doing, Jeremy? You feeling better this week?
I'm feeling better. I'm feeling better. I am not 100%, but hopefully I won't have any moments where I completely lose consciousness this episode.
What Jeremy's referring to, and I don't know if we'll post a timestamp of this, but if you watch the video from last week's episode, which feels like over a week ago now, it's been a long week, but last week Jeremy, Will, and I were here recording, and halfway through the episode, Will and I are talking about some nonsense.
That's what I thought.
I don't even remember what it was. But if you look at Jeremy's face, he does the thing what Patton Oswalt did in that episode of King of Queens. You remember this famous scene? Where it's
what a weird reference.
Well, it's this thing that Patton Oswalt was talking about before, but he was in the TV show King of Queens. He plays like the younger brother of one of the main characters or something. But some scenes, he's in the scene, but he has no dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a particular episode. You got to stay present. You're still acting. Live studio audience. So there, I believe you could find this on YouTube. You got to search like Patton Oswalt, King of Queens or something. But if you just look at Patton, I think he did this intentionally, see if they would keep it in. And they did. But the whole scene plays out. There's dialogue between all the other characters. And he's just standing there. Mm-hmm. And his eyes darting left and right between the other actors.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious. And that's what basically you're doing. You're like standing still. And it looked like, as someone put online, the drugs had kicked in at that moment.
I have no recollection of this happening, but it did clearly happen. There's video evidence on it on YouTube.
The only thing missing was the beat dropping. It would have been perfect.
Yeah. I'm sure someone could figure that out.
So, feeling better, that's great.
Yeah.
Sure.
Anyone want to know where I've been for the last month?
I just assumed you were at home.
Well, no. No,
I haven't
been at home. I have been undertaking one of the most important missions of 2019. I've been single-handedly trying to make Endgame pass Avatar by myself. I only have $40 million to go. I'm doing this heavy lift on
45,
my own.
45, last I checked. But you've been watching Endgame on repeat, nonstop, making most of that, whatever movie pass you have, and making sure that Disney gets its receipts.
I mean, the actual reason I haven't been here is mostly because of summer camp reasons and like end of school year kind of fun. But I'd like
that's
to
much
think.
Boring, much more boring.
Yeah, I'm going to theaters every time this podcast is being recorded.
When does that come out on video?
Never. Huh. I'm going to keep it alive in the theater. I'm just going to keep going and be like, well, people are still showing up to this thing.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk a little more about the box office as we get to our first section. But everything cool with everyone? Good? All the catch up done? Anything fun you guys did over the weekend?
No, man.
No,
it's all good. No bucket list things checked off. It was Father's Day.
Oh, that's right.
Right? So
happy
Father's Day to you.
Thank you.
Happy Father's Day to all of us.
It's your first Father's Day?
I think. Yes, because I think
your child is not one. So yes.
No. Well, the reason I hesitate is because for Mother's Day.
Wait, you have another child?
No, I don't have another child. Thank goodness. But for Mother's Day, some people count. When the child is still during the pregnancy as the first Mother's Day, because they're impending motherhood.
Yeah, but no one counts it the first Father's Day.
No, no, that's why I hesitated, because we had our first official Mother's Day this year, and yes, the official first Father's Day this year.
Congratulations.
As well.
What did your son get you?
Nothing.
What did you get, Jeremy?
I got a card.
Oh, you got a
nice. My daughter made me a pop-up card. It was nice.
I got a full evacuation.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I might be back in another month. I got the best gift. I got comfortable insoles for my shoes, because being a dad is hard.
Yeah, that's good.
And your feet hurt
being
at the end of the day.
Being a dad is not hard compared to being
a mom. No question. Being a mom, way harder.
I feel like I use Father's Day as another opportunity to appreciate mothers and mother of my child.
Here, here.
Danica. We did go to the park, and we just learned that there was a Boston Terrier meetup this coming weekend, so that's exciting.
That's crazy.
This weekend.
Your first child.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's move on.
All right, let's head to our first section.
Top story this week.
So, friend of the site, Simone Yetch, launched a video this week, a couple days ago now, that kind of blew our minds. And it's our top story this week. It is the Truck Law. You guys watch this?
Yes.
So it's a project that I think she's had in development for a while now. And at some point, we'd love to get her either on this show or on Still Entitled.
It wasn't
to talk about it
that long. I mean, like
earlier this year.
Yeah. We saw her when she bought the car.
I think she's had it kind of gestated in her brain for a long time.
She hinted at something when she first initially, you know, showed up with the Model 3. And she posted images of that when she was when she'd just taken it. And we knew something was in the works, but wow, did she go to fruition?
It is beautiful. So if you haven't seen this yet, and it's on the YouTube trending right now, it is Simone and also Laura Comp was in town, and also this must have been when they were here, because they also both participated in a Savage Builds episode. And we'll talk about Savage Builds in a little bit, but they also worked with a Tesla modder. Oh, shoot.
He's a cool guy, as far as I can tell. I really enjoyed his contribution to the video.
The experience of taking apart Teslas and doing modifications.
He has a lot of experience with fixing Teslas, with taking parts from ones that don't work.
Rich Rebuilds is the name of his channel.
And ones that don't, and then, you know, having a working Tesla again.
And
Marcos, too.
Yeah. And and basically carved off the back end of a Model 3 and put a flatbed in there. A flatbed with an inverter for AC power that you can plug in.
Well, that doesn't, like, everyone's talking about the inverter, like, that's amazing. That is a sweet touch.
It's but totally sweet. And the fact that you get full voltage.
It's the truck bed that is awesome.
Yes. And it works perfectly with this car, because it's flat in the back. And, you know, you can pull out the back seats, and the back seats are meant to fold forward and be basically flat. We've talked about how people with their other Teslas have, you know, camped in them before.
Right.
And this is basically taking that idea. And they did it in obviously a destructive way, but not interfering with some of the electronics, like rewiring electronics, building these cable bundles.
As soon as they made a couple cuts, the car went into emergency mode and shut down.
Yeah.
So they had to figure out how all those wires were supposed to be reconnected, and they got it working again.
And, you know, the camera system works, and all the functionality. I don't know if they've done like autopilot in it before. I don't know if she has that, but presumably, like, it's still within the just the volume of a Tesla. Of Model 3, so most of the stuff should work.
So it's not a huge, like, pickup bed, but it's there.
It's only 3.5 feet wide at the
wheel wells, right? She
was saying
that she wished it was a little more so she could fit a full sheet of plywood in there.
Right, 4x8.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, Tesla has their own pickup truck coming out soon, and no one knows what that looks like.
I don't know how soon that is.
Well, eventually, right? Yeah. There's debate in the Tesla community about, like, what the one angle that they've shown in a concept drawing, which side of the car that is.
It's the front.
It's supposed to be some futuristic Tron looking car, but for people who want that car now, Simone has done it. She's made the truck look.
And I'm coming out here with a hot take.
Uh-oh.
I hate Truckla. Truckla is trying to replace Cheese Louise. Cheese Louise is
first
the
car.
Pinnacle of electric vehicle, you know, ridership. I don't understand this. Like, everyone's just so easily pushes Cheese Louise to the side. because there's a Tesla truckla thing on it? No. Team Jeez Louise.
Which one would get more attention on the road?
Which one would actually survive on the freeway? Jeez Louise, I don't think could had a lot of like juice to actually go range-wise.
See, like the truckla is going to get you from point A to point B. Yeah. It could get you a sheet of plywood. Jeez Louise is an experience. You're going to be telling your children about the time that you survived being in that car. I'm telling you.
I don't think it's officially retired. I bet she's going to drive both. And the awesome thing is no one else has this truckla, right? If it's in the Bay Area, if she's driving around the freeway, people are going to know that's that car.
No, I bet you 1 in 10 will know, and the other 9 are going to think it's a new Tesla.
Because it's so well done.
Yeah.
I want to shout out like the part of the build video, and if you haven't watched it, you should watch it. It's 30 minutes long. It's really excellent. Is when they cut the frame and the frame starts bending in. The problem solving at that point to sort of get it over the line and reinforce the structure. And there's, I think, a lot of great scenes with the whole team kind of working together. As Adam said on Still Entitled this week, there was like a wee moment there of all of them working together. And I really enjoyed kind of the problem solving of that.
Me too. That was a good moment of tension when they cut that frame. What do you speculate Elon Musk's reaction is? Because as far as I know, he hasn't mentioned it publicly.
Well, isn't he off Twitter now?
No.
Oh. What?
He just said he was off Twitter.
He's tweeting memes yesterday.
Oh, okay. I mean, my assumption is that someone in his circle has seen it and shared it with him.
He's definitely seen it. Because everyone was tweeting at him about it yesterday. Yes. 100%. He's seen it.
What does he think about other Tesla mods? Because other people have modded Teslas, Tesla limos.
You can't group this with those. This stands by itself. It is also a creation of something he's also making.
I think that's why he can't say anything about it.
Yeah.
Because he's doing a pickup truck. They're doing a pickup truck. And so any type of praise or acknowledgement of this validates it in a way that may affect, I don't know, more speculation, investor curiosity, all that stuff. The stuff that he's gotten in trouble in the past for doing. I guess which hasn't stopped him before. But
I wonder.
I want to see her take it into for service.
Yeah, I think she might have voided her warranty.
I think warranties.
Yeah. So, take it in. See what they say.
I want to go for a ride in it.
Who doesn't? I want to go in the bed.
In the bed, yeah.
The team that put the commercial together, who we know a lot of those people, just amazing.
Yeah.
Just amazing how they captured the essence of every pickup truck commercial I've ever seen.
The lasso killed me.
Is it a lasso or a lasso?
How is that, how did that not translate? I don't understand that.
I don't know.
And people will point out it's technically not a pickup, it's a ute.
Yes, this is true. Oh. All the Aussies are on people about
explain
the,
that to me.
That is an Australian phrase for a utility vehicle that's like a coupe. Like we have crossovers here, which are this hybrid, SUVs and station wagons. In Australia, there are cars, and all over the world, there are cars that are coupe-like but have like a bed, pickup bed behind it, that aren't necessarily as big, and this totally falls into the category of a ute.
Do you think the official Tesla pickup will also be in that category?
No, I think the official Tesla pickup will be a big car, big battery.
Bigger.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just my speculation.
One last question on this. Norm, when do we start on your car? When does the conversion start? Jeremy and I are willing to come over.
Yeah.
I have an angle grinder.
Mm. I've got wire strippers.
And we have a tutorial of watching this video online.
Soldering
wire strippers. Like of all the tools you could choose, I think that one's probably not necessary.
As long as
you
can still fit the baby seat.
Yeah.
Then I can get the sign off. I think that's the most important part. Retain the baby seat capability. Yeah, and I don't think this one does.
No.
Unfortunately.
No.
There is no rear seat for babies.
But the dog is happy.
Yeah, get fresh air all day long. I guess this also fits into pop culture, but man, a lot of our friends are putting out some awesome things this past week. Adam's show premiered. This is Savage Builds. So hope you, if you didn't get a chance to watch the first episode, it is on Discovery
for
Go
free.
Right now for free in the U.S. You don't need to log in or anything. You
can just for the next couple weeks, right?
Yeah. The first episode is out. I think if you want to watch the rerun, Science Channel is doing an encore presentation this Wednesday after their presentation of BattleBots.
I want to call out something I don't think enough people are talking about with the show. Everyone's talking about the suit, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. The titanium 3D printing and like their shots of it doing like real time printing, amazing. It took me on this YouTube rabbit hole of metal 3D printing that I found just totally informative. That whole area about laser fusion of metal powders into a solid shape, so absolutely fascinating.
It's the way all laser sintering printing works, right?
SLS, yeah. In terms of you need to do, as opposed to having a bed, it's like a volume. And the volume, the powder kind of recedes from the volume from top down as opposed to from bottom up. And you want to fill that volume with as many plates. So a lot of it is in the arrangement of your parts and your pieces to
particle
kind of jigsaw,
size.
How they all can kind of Tetris together without touching.
But I also love how the material properties are different than pure titanium. Like there's a real, just like a different sort of structural integrity and strength and all sorts of different component changes because of the process.
Having messed with, you know, home 3D printing in plastics and, you know, some plastics that have filament or metal inside of the filament and things like that. Like I've seen prints that look good. I never thought, like I honestly did not think there's any way, even though it was had titanium in it, even if it was mostly titanium in the filament, that it would retain a bulletproof property.
That much. Oh, and I thought the 45 was going to shred it.
Yeah.
And not only that type of strength, but the rigidity that you can't bend it. Like they had trouble
even cutting
just
it.
Cutting
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Right. They tried to burn holes through it.
Amazing.
Like, the whole problem solving of how do you piece together these plates and like they showed a bunch of that. But you know, if you had any idea, like the number of people hours and the crew hours of just sorting and arranging. And, and that's something that they're showcasing with this show is just a lot of the team effort going in. You know, Jen Schachter, who worked on Adam's team, just organizing and labeling. There are a few extra pieces, and we're lucky enough to grab. I have a titanium piece.
I think you can give Jen PTSD if you show her, like, one of those, like, metal punches.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Sean helped. Kate helped. So a lot of the extended tested family was also contribute here and there to that build. It's a totally awesome episode. There's a lot of great photos. Just like Adam was so stoked to be in that, and it's in the cave now. All right. This weekend we got Toy Story 4 coming out. I know we talked a little bit about last week, but there's more Marvel or Disney Pixar Marvel news.
There is.
So first of all, Toy Story 4 retains the trend of Toy Story films. 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Last I checked, I think.
Okay. It's dropped.
Oh, dropped to what? 99%. Who's that one person? Oh,
I still don't. I kind of don't want to see it.
Why don't you want to see it?
Because it's about a spork.
It's.
Yeah, Norm. Defend Toy Story 4.
The spork idea, Forky. Mm-hmm. Tony Hale does a great job, one, of doing the voice acting for it. And I know that's the big novel, like idea character for this film of what. The existential crisis of a toy that is created from essentially garbage as opposed to being bought as a toy. That is totally a important part of the story, but I would say that's still probably the B story in this movie. And it's less reliant, and a lot of the humor is derived from that storyline, but the feels all come from the characters you know and love. So I think I said last week, this film, no one thought it had to be made, but I'm still glad it was made, mm-hmm. and it is right up there with the other Toy Story
so
films.
So you're saying this movie still had a lot of soul to it.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Before we get that segue, I will acknowledge, I know, very nicely done, Kishore, but last week we speculated whether this movie would have a Pixar short, and it's now since been confirmed.
Oh, we didn't speculate. We assumed.
We assumed. Oh, of course it's going to have a Pixar short. Can't wait. Is it going to be like a Night and Day? Is it going to be like a Jerry's Game?
Yeah.
What's your favorite
Pixar?
Night and Day. We know Night and Day.
It's not going to be that Olaf one that was like 21 minutes, right? It was going to be something reasonable, like
that,
Piper.
That wasn't
yeah,
in front of a Pixar movie.
It wasn't?
Oh, was it? Was
that? It was either Disney or Pixar, obviously. But yeah, it was definitely a short in front of.
Wasn't that in front of Good Dinosaur, the Olaf thing?
No,
that was more recent than that.
And Coco?
Possibly. Yeah, maybe it was Coco. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's say that.
Wow. I know we talked about it on the podcast, but okay.
It actually wasn't, because it got so much bad press that they took it out. So by the time I ended up seeing whatever movie it wasn't there anymore.
Oh. And I remember they had movie posters for the short.
They did?
Yeah, in theaters. Like, you gotta watch this upcoming story, this 21-minute story for Olaf. Well, it turns out, long story short, there is no Pixar short in front of Toy Story 4.
It was in front of Coco.
Yeah.
Wow. What's your favorite Pixar short, Kishore?
What do you think it is? It's Sanjay Supertit.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, and you're Bao.
I'm Bao. Yeah. That's right. And you're Night and Day.
Yeah, Night and Day for sure.
For the Birds is a close second.
I think it's Day and Night.
Day and Night. Yeah. The one in front of Up.
It's so good. But only in 3D. Like, you can't even see it in 3D anymore.
That's true.
It's not on the Toy Story 3 Blu-ray.
VR. This is our chance.
Oh,
release it in VR.
Please.
Right? 3D is built in.
I've gone deep on this one. I've tried to contact the director, and I've had not.
Because you want that experience.
Luck. Yeah.
You want to put it in big screen.
Yeah.
Have your giant virtual cinema and relive watching Night and Day, or Day and Night, whatever it was.
Yep, it's so good.
Yeah, it is fantastic. So no short in front of Toy Story 4, but we do have news. Is Upward? What's the name of their next film?
Onward.
Onward?
Sorry. Onward.
You know, that's confusing to me, because Onward, in my brain, is the VR game.
Yeah, it's very different from Onward, VR game.
Yeah. So Onward is their next one. But after that, coming out, I believe, 2020, is Soul.
And you said it's directed by Pete Docter?
It is his first film since Inside Out.
So is it a sequel-ish?
I don't think it's a sequel. It's the case. They said after Toy Story 4, they're putting a halt on sequels. But thematically, it could share some of the themes as Inside Out. What Pixar said is that, I guess that's next year. Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's a year from now.
June 19th. Onward later this year?
Pete Docter's previous films were Monsters Incorporated.
No, Onward's next year, March of next year. That means two Pixar films.
They won't do them
that
close together.
They are.
Onward is March 6, 2020, and apparently June 19th, 2020.
That's weird.
A mere 3 months apart is Soul. That is weird. Wow. Okay, so Pixar will take you on a journey from the streets of New York City to the cosmic realms to discover answers to life's most important questions. Disney and Pixar's Soul arrives in theaters June 19th. Is this a crossover with Eternals?
Answering life's most relevant questions, most meaningful, deepest questions? I'll pay $15 for that, no problem. Mm. That's great. Mm. That's a good deal.
Yeah.
This
logo tells me nothing.
I bet this is going to be 100% out of the gate, too. Like Toy Story 4.
And like Inside Out.
Yeah.
It's groundbreaking ideas.
This is opening itself up for some awful headlines accompanying the reviews.
Why?
Pixar's soulful.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be so many puns.
Will be bad.
So many puns.
Soul good.
It's all good.
I hope it's different than Onward. Not that I don't like. I've only seen the trailer for Onward, but Onward seems to be a story that's more fairy tale like.
Yeah.
Right. With and familiar relationships and these.
It's like fairy tale creatures living in the real world, though, right?
Yes. But there's a lot of real world stuff I hope this is more on the inside out, more conceptual.
Otherworldly. Yeah, I agree. Because Pixar's always done that so well. I mean, obviously, they started with Toy Story, which was actually they tried to make realistic-looking toys that existed in the world, but they went right on to worlds that we'd never seen before.
And it's not like I think one is better than the other. I just want to see if they're going to put out two movies 3 months apart, take big risks with both of them and have them be very different. So it doesn't feel like we're just getting Pixar and Pixar and Pixar.
I don't know. If I'm placing bets on the Pixar directors, this is the guy who I feel is most consistent. Monsters, Inc., Up, and Inside Out are a trajectory that goes upwards. And they're all good.
I think we should start a fantasy movie league with directors of Pixar films.
Uh-oh.
Let's see what happens.
I mean, there's a lot of new contenders going on.
Who's the WALL-E director? Angus?
Andrew Stanton.
Andrew Stanton.
Andrew Stanton, yeah. Give me them all day.
You like him? You like the Finding Nemo.
Finding Dory? Mm-hmm. That's pretty good track record, too. Brad Bird, pretty good track record.
Yep.
Incredibles, Incredibles 2.
Yep. Also Ratatouille.
Ratatouille, pretty good. And then you have the new directors, Cooley, I think.
Who did Toy Story 4?
Lee Unkrich. Or Toy Story 4 is Cooley. Shoot, I forget his name.
Unkrich did 3.
Yeah. And also Coco. So there you go. He's
retired.
Yeah. Toy Story 4 is Josh Cooley, I want to say. This is just pulling out my brain.
First time?
And it is Josh Cooley. Yeah. Oh, you know why Josh Cooley was familiar to me?
Why?
He did those books, I want to say. The best thing you can do for a podcast, mm-hmm. which is to Google.
Search.
He did those books, Movies Are Fun. No. That's not what I'm thinking about. This is also from Google.
It's okay. We can edit this podcast.
We're not going to edit this podcast. Yeah. Never mind. I'm thinking of someone else. All right. Other Marvel stuff. Kishore, Avengers Endgame.
Yep, I'm working on it.
So far has not beat Avatar in terms of the box office. It's 45 million short. Marvel's going to do one last push for Endgame, and they're pulling out all stops. We're getting extended cut. Is that what it is?
No.
Extra footage?
Supposedly, kind but I believe of. It's something smaller than that.
Wait, you have a hunch of what it is?
Well, I already read the article, so yeah.
Kevin Feige said that it is. He's confirmed that Endgame, before it leaves theater, will have yet another revision, because Endgame already had two versions, right? There was the version that we all saw on opening day, and then they added the Spider-Man Homecoming trailer at the end of it as an updated version. And then now, apparently after the credits, it'll be post-credit content, but not a post-credit scene in the traditional sense. And what it sounds like is they're taking some of the behind-the-scenes or deleted scenes footage that would have been on Blu-ray, would have been on the digital release.
Probably will
and
be.
And putting that in theaters so people will go back to theaters to the tune of hopefully 45 million plus.
Mm-hmm. Is that why they're doing it?
I think so.
You think so?
I think they really want that.
And I will see you all there.
As many times as it takes.
Average ticket price is about $10 now. Mm-hmm. Right? So you still need about 4 to 5 million people globally.
Got it.
So rewatch Endgame.
No problem.
On it.
Mathematically, it's working against you, Kishore.
Is it?
I think really? So. I think if you look at the trajectory, it's right. real tough.
I can
real
do
close.
This all day.
Okay. and you will. Speaking of Marvel, you know, the next Marvel movie, there are a bunch coming out, but Black Widow's in the works, and Kevin Feige also talked a little bit about Black Widow. They haven't really confirmed whether it's going to be a sequel or a prequel, but
it's
more
be prequel.
Indications are showing that it's
origin.
It's going to be a prequel story. The kind of prequel story he alluded to Better Call Saul as an example of a prequel that really revealed a lot about the characters, even though it didn't need to push plot forward.
So someone else will presumably play Black Widow?
No.
Angelina Jolie? Angelina Jolie.
Scarlett Johansson.
Sorry.
I mean, just like in Better Call Saul, you know, same actor played Saul, except obviously older.
Yeah.
Right. And Marvel will be back because DC will not be present at Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con this year. Marvel will have a big Hall H presentation. What could that mean?
That
means you're going to be there, right? Sure.
I'm going to go. Let's do it.
Let's go. Road trip to the Comic-Con.
What has this been in the past?
Well, it's been where they've shown footage, first-time footage for a lot of upcoming films, where they gather the cast.
Introduce new actors, like Brie Larson was introduced as Captain Marvel. Josh Brolin was introduced as Thanos.
It's where the first Avengers team assembled before 2012.
How deep do you think they'll go?
I think they need
to... We're going Kung Fu? That deep?
I think they're going to have Eternals and Shang-Chi be pretty present there. And I think those are the ones that they need. That's the reason to do it at Comic-Con as opposed to a place like D23. Because they need to get the comic fan buy-in and really ride that wave. Are you checking?
Checking to see if his eyes are doing that thing. Because we're doing the comic-splitting.
If Jeremy's tuning out.
Playing with my cursor.
So DC, like I said, will not be there. In fact, DC's booth is going to be consolidated with Warner Brothers booth. So won't even have that big comics booth. Of course, a lot of like in the comics world, a lot of turmoil because Vertigo looks like is going away, and we haven't talked about this in the podcast. It's a super sad note. I mean, comics publishing is a real tough business.
I haven't read a Vertigo imprint in a while, but I mean, it's just memories. Exactly.
Of the legacy of Vertigo. It's where Sandman was born out of. It's where so many Swamp Things.
It was one of the great indie lines that like kind of landed in the mainstream.
Became mainstream.
Yeah.
And they have merged those characters into the main DC Comics line. So it sucks that it's not going to allow like different risks to be taken. But again, the comics world today is very different than it was 10 or 20 years ago. DC, we didn't talk about this on the podcast last week either. In lieu of getting any type of DC panel, because we of course have the Robert Pattinson casting as Bruce Wayne for the Matt Reeves Batman movie, but next year is when Wonder Woman 1984 comes out.
Oh yeah,
and we saw the poster for it.
The first poster, is it poster / costume image?
I don't know. It was too bright for me to look at.
It was something.
The poster?
Yeah. Did you see it?
No.
It was Google this right now.
Yes, sir.
It is. An amazing costume design. It evokes. It has the eagle chest plate that is almost like people have said it's akin to the Kingdom Come.
Wow,
chest plate.
That's like that Hulk Thor movie, right?
Ragnarok. Yeah. Has the colors definitely has some of that really vibrant '80s vibe to it.
I'm hoping somebody in this movie has a color changing shirt. I feel like that's the callback that I'm looking for.
Well, Danica said that in the very first promo image that was shown of Wonder Woman 1984, her tiara looked more like a headband, like an 80s style.
Oh,
headband.
Nice. Linda Carter throwback.
Yeah. We're talking about color changing. Did Linda Carter have a color changing shirt?
No, I just feel like that's like a late 80s thing.
Oh, like Freezy Freakers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
what is this Eternals thing you keep referring to?
No.
Kishore, you want to really explain? No. I did a poor job explaining
it
last time.
No, we can explain it, but no. No.
Do it.
No, we're not talking about the Eternals.
Okay, never mind.
Like, Thanos we'll wait for it.
Thanos is an Eternal.
There's like genetics to explain. Like, there's too much stuff. Like,
oh, no.
It's cosmic. It's I've genetic. Lost interest. Like, yeah, it's You've real lost. Bad.
Wait for the movie to come out. Watch the YouTube explainer. After Comic-Con will be D23. That's the end of August. And the expectation is that in addition to a lot of the Disney films and the Marvel films that will be shown there, they're going to talk about Marvel's involvement in Disneyland. Because end of this summer, Star Wars Land will have launched. And obviously, Disney is looking forward to what else can they do to their theme parks. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like in Disneyland, they're going to build some type of MCU area.
Well, this is actually old news. They actually started construction in October. They shut down the Bugs Life in September, and they began totally renovating that. And they had the Starks industry signs up
for construction
surrounding that then.
Yeah.
But what just happened was they just got permits.
Anaheim had to give them permits for maybe
like
a bar.
Food and
exactly.
Pizza. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so there'll be another place where you can buy alcohol. I guess it's going to be themed after Ant-Man. It's a microbrewery. Do you get it? And I don't know. There's a lot of shopping.
Gosh, if it was themed after Ant-Man, they could have just kept the Bugs Life stuff there.
That's funny. That's good. Yeah.
So not a full ride.
Well, what do you mean? Like
it won't be as big as like Cars Land or
Well, they already have
Galaxy's
the Tower
Edge.
Of Terror remake. So that's what their anchor is for this whole side of the park. And this is just phase one. Apparently phase two is actually going to involve
using the parlance.
Phase two is going to involve like a serious roller coaster that's indoors.
And so this is California Adventure then?
Yes, but they're doing the same thing, I think, in Beijing.
Disney. Oh, okay.
Also, I would imagine Disney World.
Yeah. Walt Disney
there
World.
Is a new coaster under construction at Epcot, and I think it's Guardians of the Galaxy, because it's the only IP they can use in Florida.
Right, that's right, because east of the Mississippi, it's still Universal has the rights for the Marvel characters, and they're going to hold on to those as long as they can. Spider-Man ride, do it, Universal. Yeah, own those rights.
There's nothing like going to Universal Orlando and seeing, like, above a cafe, a giant Silver Surfer. And I'm like, they're a little out of date.
It does feel a little 90s, does it? But I don't think kids care. Spider-Man ride's still great at Universal.
Do you guys plan to go to Galaxy's Edge this year?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
I mean, if I got an invite and could go, I would jump at the opportunity.
Have you guys watched any of the videos?
Yeah.
People building lightsabers? That's a whole, like, I expected there to be a la carte place you go and you spend however long you want building your lightsaber.
No, it's a
20-minute production.
Boutique, like a special experience. That's why it costs $200.
Exactly. Yeah, so you're surrounding, you get into a bar-like area with someone in the center who talks to you about the Force, and you choose your
Kyber crystal.
What color do you want? Yeah. And then you basically pick all your parts. And then
it's about the experience.
But it's about like keeping it to a certain amount of time so they can roll the next group in there, too.
Which is how they do the Harry Potter wand thing.
But that one's more of a performance.
Yeah, that's more of a performance. This is a little bit more...
Because
like,
you don't...
Everyone's involved.
You know, you go to the store, the wand store, and you're just taking the wand off the shelf... Nicely packaged, but you're watching the short performance. It chooses a lucky child in the room, and lucky parents have to buy the wand, or sad kids, you know, rest of the day.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about this, right? Like, it's a small group of like 5 to 7 people, and then the whole, you know, magic happens in the room, and then the performer, the lead wizard, picks a lucky child, and the wand has chosen you. Now my assistant will escort you to the checkout counter where the parents want, yeah, sorry, you don't get it for free. The parents will have to spend, you know, $50, $100 or whatever it is to buy that wand. They choose the children of the parents who look like the biggest suckers.
Yeah,
who
probably.
Can't say no? Who can't say no? No, our arms aren't folded, right?
But everybody can buy one, though, right?
Anyone can buy one, but you want to have the story, the experience.
Oh, I see.
What's better? Like, if you're 7 years old, if you're 5 years old, and you're at Universal Studios, you know, Hollywood or Florida, and you went to the store, and yeah, it looks like the amazing wand store, and your parents just put one off the shelf, and you got to check it out. Yeah, you're gonna be happy with that. But to go back to school with the story of being in this magical room and things happening, and then a wand choosing you.
Yes. Yeah. But the way you tell it, it's like you have a good story. You go back, you can retell it. But I think for children, even like 10 and under.
Just having the wand.
Like, no, that'll change your life.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Like, you'll
that's
think.
That's what I'm saying.
I was chosen.
That is why it costs $100 to get into these theme parks.
Right.
You're buying experiences. You're paying for memories. And when you, right as soon as these memories are being formed, these are crucial periods in their developmental time. Okay, so Star Wars Land or Galaxy's Edge. There's a whole lightsaber thing. There's a whole what is it?
There's a real world
data storage things. What are those things called?
I don't know. I was thinking of the character. There's a blue haired woman who is a character, and she's a new Star Wars character, and she's wandering around the park.
Oh.
And she talks to you, and you can help her avoid the Imperials, and help her, you know, do certain things within that area of the park, which is neat because I haven't seen them do that anywhere else in the park.
Hmm. The thing I read actually is it doesn't have to do with the data storage things, but it is the Kyber crystals. Apparently, there's a whole mythology about the Kyber crystals that you get at the Star Wars Land, and people are unraveling more secrets.
Secrets?
Yeah.
Secrets. I know there's black ones, and if you, like people have already discovered, if you hold the containers up to a light, like to your cell phone flashlight, you can see if there's a black one inside, and they're rare.
Mm. The holocrons are what I'm thinking about. I think they're tied. There's a whole, basically, there's more you get out of the lightsaber than just. Buying the lightsaber,
right?
Again, that's why they're very expensive. Do you guys see this video with Boss Town Dynamics?
I did. I mean, I think it made the rounds because everyone thought it was real, or some people thought it was real at first.
Well, yeah. So let's give him props for doing a video. People thought
the
it was
CGI
real.
In it is excellent. Yeah. Of the robots fighting back in the context of a Boston Dynamics video.
Right.
It looks really good. You see them torturing the robot for a while, and then it finally flips out at the end.
But so this is from Quarter, and they do a lot of like short films and special effects films, and this is really, really well produced. It's a like a 3-minute video that goes through your standard series of tests of like the kind of harassing of the robots you see from Boston Dynamics videos to show stability.
Starting with a hockey stick, which is what Boston Dynamics themselves have done.
And then they did things like, you know, put markers on the walls and things to make it look like the robot was tracking and then doing all these like dexterity tests.
Yeah.
You know, playing keep away with it. And then the robot starts, it turns. It turns at the very last minute, which I think was a smart move on there.
No, at first it grabs the hockey stick. Like they're hitting them with it and then it grabs it in a way that only a robot could, like immediately and very quickly. And then they kind of put their hands up and then they resume the torturing of the robot, like in the next scene. But then eventually the robot fights back and grabs the gun. It all goes wrong.
And it all goes wrong, yeah. The grabbing of the hockey stick, happens halfway through the video, and that's the one I saw. And I saw it first on Twitter. Like someone made an animated GIF of it.
Oh yeah.
And I think that was the better way of sharing this, because if you watch the YouTube video at full 1080p, it looks super CG. Like it's great animation.
Yeah.
But it looks clearly like CG. The lower res compressed GIF of it was much more convincing.
Yeah, you're probably right. Still, the CG is.
It's great.
I mean, surprisingly good. And then they kind of reveal how they do it at the end,
which
is worth watching.
Yeah. Totally worth watching. Moving on. Oh, a Reddit thread.
Yeah, explain this to me.
Okay. This blew my mind. This was, it wasn't even in
the
Daystrom.
Real?
I want to believe it's real. This is from the Star Trek subreddit. And a user posted there theorizing that if you look at Wesley Crusher's famous sweater.
This is a gray sweater.
It's a gray sweater with the three stripes on top.
Red, yellow, and what? Green?
Blue.
Blue?
Okay. That it's kind of a green-blue. It's an aquamarine.
Okay.
That those three stripes are supposed to represent the three potential tracks that an ensign can take or a cadet can take going into Starfleet. Command, engineering, medical, science.
Why does he think this?
Because the colors match?
I disagree. It's an ugly 90s sweater.
You think it's an 80s sweater?
80s. Oh, late 80s,
late
right?
80s sweater.
Oh, you're saying it's the three colors of the uniforms that people wear in Starfleet.
Yes.
I see.
As like, this is the potential. You wear this as your unlimited, your unbound potential.
Right.
And as you go through your cadet training, to be an ensign.
What are the colors correlate to? What are they?
Well, red is command.
Okay.
And yellow in next gen is security and engineering.
Uh-huh.
And blue is medical and science.
Okay. So who wears red in next gen?
Picard.
Riker.
That's it?
No, there's the... on Lower Decks...
Wesley as an ensign does wear red.
On Lower Decks, there's some ensigns that wear it, too.
Flight, you wear red.
Yeah, Ops.
You wear red.
Like, did Worf not wear red?
No, nope. Worf wore yellow.
Okay, sorry.
Worf,
how dare you,
Geordi, Data, and Worf wore yellow. And Beverly and Diana... Deanna wore blue.
And Data?
Data wore yellow.
All right, there you go.
As engineering. I guess he's technically, what is he? What department is he in?
Android ops.
Is it engineering? I guess it makes sense. It, obviously the colors were swapped from
That's
TOS.
Cool. That's cool.
But
I'll go along with that. But no one else was wearing that, I would assume. Like, no, did you see any other cadets?
No. He was special. He was acting ensign.
Right, but like there was an episode with him in school. And no one was wearing anything like
this, the official uniforms of cadets actually look very similar to the Starfleet uniforms, except you don't get the pips.
Okay, interesting.
So the episode you're talking about is where they're in San Francisco.
The Red Squad?
Yeah.
Episode?
With Tom Paris, the actor, except not playing Tom Paris.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be the
Sam
character.
Sam Liccardo? What is the name?
It's not important.
That was supposed to be the same character going into Voyager, but they just changed up the name. Hmm. Just something that popped up in Reddit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll go along with that. It's good.
Do you not browse like Daystrom Institute from time to time?
No.
What?
That's
like the best subreddit.
Daystrom Institute?
Do you know what the Daystrom Institute is?
No.
It is one of the premier physics and space science research institutes in the 23rd century.
Daystrom,
uh-huh.
Who was... the name of a character in the original series.
Oh.
He was the one who created, I believe, the holodeck. He's one of the most famous scientists. Like, he created the AI that would eventually lead to things like the holodeck.
Okay.
Richard Daystrom. You can read about this in Memory Alpha. You know what Memory Alpha is.
Oh, yeah.
I call him Dick Daystrom.
Is that like Wikipedia for Star Trek?
Yes.
All right.
Memory Alpha is the wiki for Star Trek.
Got it.
For every episode, every character. But Richard Daystrom... was an original series, and he created the inventor of the Computronic and Dualtronic computer, as I'm reading on Memory Alpha, which Star Trek fans have theorized is because it was about AI. It's basically about the singularity, right? Putting your brain inside a computer. And Star Trek fans, the head canon that Star Trek fans have created, that is also the technology that allows for AI in the holodeck. artificial characters in the holodeck for things like Moriarty.
Yeah, but what are you browsing every week?
So Daystrom Institute, which is a fictional place in the Star Trek universe, is like that's their Space Princeton or Space MIT. Space MIT.
Okay.
Right, is Daystrom Institute. On Reddit, there is a subreddit called the Daystrom Institute in which serious Star Trek fans.
Right, like there's any other kind. Right.
Post thoughts and ideas about their theories and create the fan canon of the show and have honestly amazing discussions about things from starship design. Like one of the things that popped up recently, right? Why is DS9, why are the pylons concave inward as opposed to convex outward for ship docking?
Yeah.
For sure?
I've always wondered that.
It's a legitimate question.
Legitimate question. And it's because, as has been theorized by posters on the Daystrom Institute.
Let's say the warp field bubble.
Shield bubble. Easier one of them. There you go.
Nice done.
And also the arc for defenses, because it was a military base. For defenses, you want to put, you get the most widest range for the phaser, the photon torpedo launchers, if your pylons are posted inwards. Plus, if you have the ships on the outside, the ships become vulnerable. And since all the ships are warp core based, antimatter matter reaction based, they essentially become bombs that become targets. You want to protect them within the pylons between the defenses.
So I will give you that's some
offenses.
Very Cardassian thinking.
So the kids from Galaxy Quest browsed this subreddit.
They probably are moderators on this.
What, 56,000 members?
It is an amazing subreddit.
Wow. All right.
I just gonna put it out there.
All right. There you go.
All right.
That was like 2 years of warp field theory that took me to come up with that answer.
And that's about it. Oh, last thing in pop culture, I will give once again a recommendation, Jeremy, to watch Black Mirror. Okay. This is your homework.
Yep.
Season 5 is out. I finally watched all season 5. I'm going to give my quick review. I do agree with what a lot of people have said online that it's the weakest of the seasons, that I think it's lost what it's trying to say about technology, or it's kind of saying the same thing over and over again. I do think that Striking Vipers, the episode with Anthony Mackie, and forget the actor who plays Black Manta, he's also in it. I think that's probably the strongest episode. And while people have said that's an episode about VR, I don't think it's an episode about VR. It's an episode about video game culture and friendships and connections.
Huh. So watch it with your family.
Watch it with my family? They told me I could not play VR anymore. And that does it for pop culture. Before we move on to our next segment, I want to let you know that support for This Is Only a Test this week's comes from Indeed. If you're looking for your next tech gig, it's time to flip the job search script with Indeed Prime. On Indeed Prime, top tech companies apply to you with jobs you'll love. Stop living for the weekend and start doing what you love with Indeed Prime. All you have to do is fill out one free application, and Indeed Prime takes care of the rest, putting tech talent in front of thousands of companies like PayPal, Twilio, WP Engine across more than 90 cities. And it's that simple. They'll match you with the right role based on your skills, experience, and goals, and you won't spend any more time sending resumes after resumes to those companies. Companies apply to you, not the other way around. Plus, every Prime candidate gets free one-to-one live access to a technical career coaching, resume reviews, mock interviews, and even salary negotiation tips to seal the deal. So whether you're hiring or looking, meet your match on Indeed Prime. Join now at indeedprime.com/test. Again, that's indeedprime.com/test.
It's kind of a programming montage sound that whole soundtrack is for this segment.
That's like what you would imagine in some type of 1980s. TV show about, like, you get close-ups of fingertips typing on the keyboard, like stressful thinking, wiping off sweat off the brow, and a nice aha moment, and then, like, spinning around the chair and go, I got it. I've solved it.
He gets me.
Hacked.
I disagree completely. It sounds to me like the theme to Doogie Howser MD.
Oh, yeah. All
which right. opened with not a computer.
Not too far.
Right? Type on a computer, right? Mm-hmm. Wasn't that what the opening sequence was?
Yeah.
It's true.
There you go. We're going to kick off technology news this week with crypto. So, Jeremy.
Oh, God.
Time for you to explain.
No. Look, it's on here because it's a big piece of news. The thing is, none of us are qualified to talk about it, but we need to mention that it's happened. Facebook has introduced their own cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrencies, you know, like Bitcoin. Except this one's called Libra, and it's supposed to be more like, I don't know, less volatile and and connected. What? That's what I'm told. Gunther Kirch, our producer, is an expert on these things. Even he couldn't explain this to me. But it's supposed to be, you know, a little bit like Ripple, if you follow that one. And it's, you know, it's. I have questions. I want to know, like, why would I use this currency? Why is Facebook doing this?
So, low volatility, probably the best interest to them.
Yeah.
Right?
I suppose
for,
so.
For using a currency. And it sounds like, you know, the report's saying this will be used as payment systems for WhatsApp and Messenger.
Like
and
a worldwide currency. That
exactly. So sure, you lose all that going between banks and exchange rates and all the skimming off the top, that all the fees, essentially.
Yeah.
If they own the currency and they control all the transactions.
But every exchange like charges you something. So if you're going to trade, if you're going to convert this back into whatever your local currency is, it's still going to cost you something. I'm curious, like, if anybody out there thinks this is a great thing, I'm curious. Let us know in the comments.
Maybe it only goes one way.
What?
Maybe you can only put money in.
Right. That's what they
can't take money out.
I imagine that would be good for them.
Oh, it's very Hotel California then. I don't mean this in any sort of cynical way. I legitimately don't understand this. And here's a comment from an Ars Technica writer in the like article announcing this. Libra is a permissioned blockchain where there's a fixed number of nodes that are all known to each other. Sybil attacks aren't a concern, so there's no need for proof-of-work security mechanism. So my guess is that energy consumption won't be a significant concern. I do not understand anything in that entire like paragraph, basically. I would actually love to understand more about this.
Energy
so if there are some good explainers
I do
out
know
there,
that energy consumption
I
is
understand,
a big complaint about Bitcoin because it costs so much money to run the computers to calculate and
but it doesn't map.
Mine.
Yeah, but it doesn't map like why a fixed number of nodes would actually I don't understand this at all.
Okay. That's that.
All right. Well,
explain it to us.
It only works if it's going to be seamless and for the end users not to worry about any of this stuff, not to worry about volatility, transactions.
Yeah.
If they can put in money and get more value out of it and have and make it simple, low friction transactions is, I guess, the goal. It's not some type of investment scheme that they're building up, presumably. Yeah. Did you hear about what Google's doing locally? So this is interesting. So more relevant to the Bay Area, but of course, Bay Area, we have a housing crisis.
I have a lot to say about this.
And a lot of like a lot of big tech cities, right? With all the growth, you know, they're displacing people, and basically more people are coming in with high income than the housing market can support. And it is a thing that the local governments are reckoning with, right? It's a big controversial topic. Google announced this week that they are devoting what they say is $1 billion to help mitigate housing needs in the housing crisis in more in close to where they are in Mountain View, not necessarily San Francisco. But let's look at the fine print.
Yeah, let's break it down.
Because split between this $1 billion is really $50 million in cash, right?
Which is dedicated towards alleviating like keeping people in their homes.
Yes.
Essentially, it is like a stay
subsidy,
in your housing subsidy
for right. So, which is that's not an insignificant portion of it, but we're talking about that's 5%. 750 million, 75% of this is for what they it's value of land they own that will then get turned into development that they're going to use to develop or lease out for housing to be built over 10 years.
So this is the big issue. So they have property that is zoned commercially that is valued currently at about $750 million. There's a really good Vox explained podcast about what I'm about to talk about, which is that zoning in California is mostly done as single family home zoning so that multiple units can't be built on that land. Commercial zoning is slightly different. What Google is saying is we're going to give over this land for homes to be built, but it has to be municipally approved to be rezoned to housing, and not only not to single family housing, which is what homeowners want it to be zoned to, so that their property values stay the same, but to multi-unit housing, so that construction can happen on it. That step has been a step that's being explored in California for decades. And the fight over zoning regulations is incredibly complicated. It is fraught politically because homeowners have been rallying against this for a number of years. But they point to some really good data that's important. So last year in the South Bay, where Google is talking about doing all this land transfer, there were only 3,000 homes built. 3,000 homes built,
yeah,
for a market where unemployment is below 2%. That they're suggesting that if this turns over, they could build 15,000 homes. There's so many problems with those ifs that I think there should be a skeptical eye delivered to this. There was a great discussion on KQED Forum this morning about the complexities of this. It's really unfortunate. It's basically, if homeowners said, yes, we want to see multi-unit housing built, and we started just building housing, a lot of things could be solved. But all the prognostications at this point is that this will go nowhere.
Well, you did a much better job with that than I did with the Facebook crypto.
Oh, just wait till my Eternals explain.
And then the other $250 million is incentives for other developers. But again, they're categorizing these as investments, so it's not pure.
That one's actually more interesting to me, because if you're a developer and you're looking at like a 10% return on like a luxury condo building, mm-hmm, and by having this fund, they take a low income or affordable housing unit whose margin is only 5%, but mitigate the risk by investing the capital in, well, then, like, that can move things from a finance standpoint. But, wow, this is, like, really weird for our podcast to be talking about stuff like this in depth. But
I mean, it's getting the headlines, right? It's working from their PR perspective that they're announcing
a billion dollars. And
investment.
Wells Fargo came out today and also said they're dedicating $1 billion and very similarly structured.
But that, you know, the skeptical eye, you know, the fine print should be read.
It's a people problem. It is a single family homeowner problem. It is not a corporate problem.
Hmm. This just came out today. Wirecutter has a advisory for people. If you have bought a Nest Cam, a used Nest Cam, like on eBay, Craigslist or something, this is Nest owned by Amazon. I can't think about who owns who. No, Nest owned by Google. Sorry, yeah. Ring is owned by Amazon.
Mm-mm.
God, all these companies are being bought up. Back to Google. If you bought a used Nest Cam, there's a risk that your camera can be accessed by the previous owner still if they tied it to like their account.
Even if you like sign out or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yuck.
Okay.
So
how do you fix that?
I don't think there is a solution. If it's linked to a WinkHub 2, it's still piping to there. They need to fix it on their end.
So buy a new Nest.
Yes. Or if you bought a used one, unplug it for now until they make the announcement that they've solved it on the server end. Yeah. For a factory set it.
Okay.
And that might help.
Okay.
As well.
I just have the thermostat. That's all I have.
Well, somebody else is going to be.
That's how they started.
Did you buy it used on eBay? Because somebody else is going to control the temperature.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I've been wondering why it's hitting 80 recently. Yeah.
Makes no less sense in Bay Area where we don't have AC, the thermostat.
But yet.
Yeah. Last week did make a case for it. Some new stuff with CarPlay?
Dude, you guys don't use CarPlay. Otherwise, I think there'd be more excitement on this panel about this. So iOS 13 was revealed at WWDC, and since then the betas have been released to developers. And 9to5Mac did a rundown of the most recent beta 1 and 2. Of CarPlay, and it's got some cool stuff in it that I am personally excited for because I live on CarPlay when I'm in my car. Number one, it's going to show multiple things at once. So you're going to have your map on the screen as well as music controls. And there's nothing I do more than switch between those two things all the time, like in the menu. So that's great. It's also, I don't know, it's going to have a calendar functionality, which I don't totally understand. Mm-hmm. But I guess it potentially, if you need to call somebody at a certain time, it would show that in that window.
This isn't replacing the iMessage.
And you initiate, no, it's still there. But you can like initiate a call that way. You can get directions someplace if it's on your calendar. Like it surfaces the things that are relevant right now. But maybe like best, most important to me is the worst thing about CarPlay is if you're in a car with your family and somebody wants to use the phone and it's in use in CarPlay, the phone has to be on whatever screen is on CarPlay. And so if they hit the home button, your CarPlay maps go away.
It's mirrored?
Yes. Well, it's essentially mirrored. It's not the same thing, but it's the same app. And if somebody opens up messages, it'll open up messages on CarPlay and that kind of thing. And if you say, no, I need the map, and you hit it on CarPlay, it'll force their screen to go to the map.
Well, theoretically, you don't want people you don't want someone using their phone. You just want them, the interface, to be the CarPlay voice interface.
I don't know if that's the theory. I mean, they probably didn't figure a way to multitask that properly. Mm. Well, they have in iOS 13. So okay. Now it's completely independent.
So it's a background event using the processing power of a phone, and so you can be
the person
on
in the
Reddit.
Passenger seat can be doing whatever they want on your phone. I assume the music will be the same,
right?
But they can use a different app, and CarPlay stays the same.
I wish that was the case for more than just CarPlay, because if you're using AirPlay, you know, if someone has their iPad or their phone and piping a movie from iTunes,
like to a TV or something,
you want to, you know, sometimes you don't want that device to be incapacitated.
Yeah. Well, this now shows that they can do it.
I mean, this is when we talk about diminishing returns for the products. It's an unnecessary feature, but they have we're finding out there's a lot more processing power in these devices than is really needed for a lot of just the day-to-day stuff. And this is maybe where some of that stuff can, that processing power can be put to use.
Hear, hear.
Going to more car stuff. Now, this goes, and we're not going to jump into a Elon shower this week, but some Tesla news, Tesla cars news. Last week at E3, the weirdest presentation was a fireside chat with Jeff Keighley. I always confuse Jeff Johns. Jeff Keighley,
yeah,
who runs like the big show
the video game
down
awards.
There and Video Game Awards, but had Todd Howard and Elon Musk together on stage.
Why was Elon Musk at E3?
I don't know.
Because
it is a crowd. It drew a crowd.
Video games.
Yeah. Okay. I guess. And then, they announced that Fallout Shelter is coming into Tesla cars.
The mobile game.
The mobile game.
Okay.
The kind of like, you know, base building.
Yeah. Free to play.
Free to play mobile game is coming up. It's coming to the cars.
Your car.
Sure. I mean, I thought Cuphead was a interesting enough announcement.
Yep.
But you know, you plug in, there's now support for PS4 Xbox controllers, and in addition to the touchscreen.
Yep.
And there's Beach Buggy Racing.
What?
It's something that's coming out. It's a new racing game. Have you seen the video for this? They did a whole commercial of like a race car driver getting into
Elon's
Tesla.
Been tweeting it out. Yeah.
And doing a full racing game in a parking lot.
Is this a new game?
I think it's a new game.
And like all the cars in it, like the car that you're driving in it
too,
is a Tesla.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
I think it's a mobile. It's a mobile.
I feel like this is mission creep in the worst way possible.
Yeah, it's super weird to put engineering resources, but they work with the developers Vector Unit. So it was a mobile game, iOS and Android and tablet game, Beach Buggy Racing 2.
Oh, wow. Use your steering wheel to steer?
You use your steering wheel to steer.
Can you do that with pole position currently?
Yeah, I think you can. Yeah.
I mean, guess they're trying to make the car an entertainment experience while you're charging.
That, I think, is the thinking. Because web browsing, Netflix is, you know, stuff that's eventually going to come. That I know they're proud of the battery capacity and this stuff in the grand scheme of, you know, power required to drive, push cars down freeways at 65 miles per hour is inconsequential. People aren't going to be sitting in their garages or really in parking lots, you know, or drive-ins playing these games. The place to do it is
a supercharger
or a not-so-supercharger, right? Any other type of charger. And people have their phones anyway, which is what most people are on, but I guess here's a way to who's going to be spending it? Because like Fallout Shelter is not a pick-up-and-play, you know,
no,
3-minute thing.
Time investment.
It could be a time suck.
So this is rolling out now. Do you have it?
I don't have it yet. And in addition, they're also using this as a showroom attraction, because between now and the end of the month, they're going to have demo units at their showrooms, which I guess they still have a few of those.
What's
around.
What do you mean a demo unit?
They're calling it Tesla Arcade, where people can go to Tesla centers and play games. RSVP at a store near you.
The most fun thing you could possibly buy.
I guess that's their mission. Yeah.
And I assume it's going to be free because there's no point in selling these games.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
It goes to show, like, there's a lot of processing capability on their dashboard.
Yeah.
And maybe because they're working with third-party firms, the third parties are more interested in making these work for the cars to, you know, increase appeal for people who have the cars and maybe will download them on their tablets.
Does it use force feedback on the steering wheel?
I don't know.
That'd be cool.
I don't know. I just don't. I have no interest unless I'm like even at a charger, right? You go to one of these superchargers. Everyone's just on their phone checking email, surfing. Happy to do that. I'm still plugged in,
dude. What if though? What if?
Don't say multiplayer.
You could do an eight car multiplayer.
Oh,
that like everyone synced up at the supercharger.
Only at the supercharger.
Yeah,
and you got to send challenges to people. Like, superchargers. I'm gonna skip this one. Only one car. I'm gonna go to the one 30 miles down the road.
All your
because
audio would be synced
seven
up.
Seven cars there.
I love this idea. And then like whoever wins, you could get like the lights could flash and the horn could honk, and like everyone else would know. That'd be great. You could have a high score list that was persistent.
And everyone gets out of their cars and high fives each other?
Yeah.
Shake hands.
It brings you together. It gets you off your phone and makes you friends with everybody.
My experience has been one of two kinds. One at the...
At the supercharger?
At the superchargers. One where the Kettleman City one, people are friendly. And especially in the early days, like last year when there weren't as many Model 3s on the road, people were curious about the car.
Yeah.
Look around. A lot of people are seeing what type of mods they've done, you know, car wraps and rims and stuff. And they have a friendly chat. Like, oh, that's a cool thing you did for your car.
Uh-huh.
Right. Or the other experience is no one talks to anyone. Everyone's head buried in phone.
Exactly.
I don't know what type of community they want to build.
You could do, I mean, even without multiplayer, you could do a pretty great sound in that car because it's, full
I
mean, surround sound.
I watched the trailer for Rise of Skywalker at a supercharger.
That's right.
And piped the sound through Bluetooth, and it sounded really good.
I don't know. I think this multiplayer thing might have legs. Like, remember, Virgin tried to do that on the airplane. You could play against people in different seats. But that experience, the experience of actually getting into a game was unpleasant. But
well, they were using the old interfaces, which are super slow.
Yeah.
Very laggy. Yeah. I mean, back then, Virgin wanted people to send drinks to each other, say hi, ping each other.
Yeah.
It was a Tinder on a plane. Didn't work out so much. Yeah. Yeah.
Would you like to poke Norm in seat 12A?
No. I just wanted to take a nap. Google Pixel 4. All right. Pixel 4, wasn't Google I.O. just like last month?
This is what's weird. So Pixel 4, the rumors are, and it's been pretty much confirmed by Verizon, will be out in October. There were, like, can you call it leaks when Google itself puts out images of the phone from its own Twitter?
Well, I think it was in response to real leaks that went out, and then a tongue-in-cheek, well, you want pictures? Here they are.
Yeah, and you see the rear of the phone, which has in its upper left at least a three-camera system, if not four.
So this is the design theme, I think, for this year, right? The camera module becoming less of – it used to be just the circle. Like if you look at like the iPhone XR, it is just – the bulge is just a circle for the lens. The lens element needs to be out there. Mm-hmm. On many phones now, a two-camera system. So, for example, I'm going to go back to the iPhone ecosystem. You have two cameras, and it's an oval bulge, right? It's not exactly an oval. It's like a long, like I don't know what that shape is called, but like a, you know, it's connected, right?
Mm-hmm.
To the theory is that on it looks like confirmed on the Pixel 4, but the theory also is whenever the iPhone is going to come out this year, it will be more of a larger square.
A rounded square.
A rounded square as a bulge.
Because there's more lenses.
Because it's hiding behind it lens elements as well as the light, as well as depth sensor maybe. But think of that as like the imaging unit of the phone, and that becomes more and more accepted as the back of the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also leaks of it out in the wild, so the images Google put out have been pretty much confirmed by some of the images we see.
This is a real non-story.
What?
There's nothing here.
Oh, I put in the wrong link. That's why. You can see the actual image if you go to a different thing in there.
Okay.
I think the design of that phone is actually, like as Norm said, is pretty indicative of the phones we're going to see this fall.
Yes.
And maybe not even, like, this year, but like going forward, the back of the phone, just more of that real estate being devoted to some type of world-facing sensor, as Apple wants to do more world mapping, build up on its SLAM technology, as we expect them to go into AR pretty heavily, that just makes more and more sense. I'll make phone cases, you know, relevant again, and people have to buy whole new phone cases to have the right, you know, holes for these notches. But we're never going to go back to the day of the flat, the flush back of the on the back of the phone. You know, the good old days, right? You know, iPhone 4, iPhone 5, where the phone could sit flat on a table and be flush? No.
Yep, that's no. Gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless it's in a case.
Yeah. Any either of you use Kindles?
I do. I still use a Kindle Paperwhite.
Oh.
Do you use it right before bed?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Wow, your eyes must be hurting. Well, it depends on the light you have in the room. You don't have the backlit one, right? Does the Paperwhite have the backlight? It does have backlight. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oasis is their high-end one. $250. I can't believe it's still a thing. But there's a new Kindle Oasis that does color temperature adjustment at night.
Cool.
Yeah. There you go. $250 for 8 gigs.
Filters out the blue light.
Still, I'm not convinced. A believer in this blue light thing.
Oh, you're a scientist. My doctor, just like this week, told me I needed to
keep
to
hearing
use it
everywhere.
Yep.
I don't know.
You
about
try it?
Because
I do it. I put it on the night mode right before bed, just in case.
Just in case any blue hits you?
Yeah, and then, you know, I feel like I sleep all right. I don't know. Is it bad? I don't know.
I'm skeptical that it really has any of these impacts that are being said. Because it's not like you're staring at that blue light consistently. You're like pulling up and down your phone. I'm just not. I got to look into some studies about this.
Yeah, be careful because you might be
look
wrong.
Out. In a month from now, when I'm back again,
yeah,
I'll have information
exactly
on this.
Exactly.
And I think that does it for technology news this week. Let's move on. This week's episode of This Is Only a Test is made possible with support from Pedal. Debt is a massive problem, and the truth is, traditional credit card companies don't do much to help. But now there's a new kind of credit card company called Pedal. Pedal was started by a group of people who were sick of old school credit card companies. That's why their Visa credit card has no fees, and their mobile app is designed to help you manage spending responsibly. Pedal's cashback program rewards you for doing the right thing. Earn 1% cashback right away and up to 1.5% cashback when you make 12 on-time payments. Pedal is a great modern option for anyone, but especially those who are just starting to build credit, because you can even qualify even if you've never had credit in the past. Pedal partners with WebBank member FDIC. As of today, the Pedal Visa's variable APRs range from 15.24% to 26.24%. It's about time a credit card company helped you succeed financially. Check out the Pedal credit card. It's responsible credit for the modern world. Go to pedalcard.com/test today to find out more. Once again, that's Pedal with a T. Pedal, P-E-T-A-L, card.com/test.
Moment of silence.
Oh, welcome return.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
People
I'm glad my intro was about as consistent as always was.
Princess Bride is one of the possible books that my son can choose for summer reading.
Oh, so I'll give you a choice right now. Do you want to hear the Princess Bride story, or do you want me to get on my soapbox?
Oh, that's
Princess Bride story.
Okay.
Princess Bride story. Okay.
Go always choose your Princess Bride. Oh, how about both? Why not both?
We will do, we'll get to both for sure. All right. Do you know what polydactylism is? It is the condition where you have an extra digit on your hand.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And for the longest time, polydactylism has actually been pretty well studied. There are even references to people with extra digits going back about 100 years in scientific literature. Mm-hmm. For the most part, polydactylism is indicated that that finger isn't incredibly useful. Well, as we've gotten better understanding of polydactylism and now we've able to apply genetics to it, we've seen some like shifts in our understanding. In a paper that came out in early June of this year, there was a study of two children with six fingers, and they were superhuman with this six finger.
X-Men.
They're able to do incredible things that we see as mundane. They're able to tie their shoe with one hand, and not like, oh, they could tie their shoe with one hand. They could just tie their shoe as we would with two hands, normally with six fingers, which doesn't make sense because most of our understanding of polydactylism is that the fingers sort of attached and it won't have freedom of motion. This actually had an extra degree of freedom. And when they looked at some of the anatomical scans and then MRI scans of the brain, mm-hmm. found independent musculature, skeleton structure, and then independently developed areas of the brain that are controlling that digit. So it was able to be controlled independent as opposed to some other polydactyl cases where when you would control that extra digit, it would like cause another digit to contract.
It's tied to like people sometimes. I mean, the plasticity of the brain, like you get locked in pretty early in your life where a lot of people can't move a pinky finger without moving, you know, their ring finger because it's not their thumb. You're not using it all the time. You're not Tarzan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is also as much a Gattaca story as it is a Princess Bride story. Do you remember in Gattaca, Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman go to a concert, a pianist, and the pianist has 12 fingers, and he's seen as like inferior because he's not genetically perfect, but he's the only one who could play this music that was specifically arranged for 12 fingers.
So this reading the study made me mad at my fork the other night. I'm like, stupid five-finger hand. Like, I have to control this fork in this dumb way. Imagine, we talk about the word, we use the word DOF a lot on this podcast.
Degree of freedom?
Yeah. Think about if we could apply that to our hands. If we had an extra degree of freedom on our hands, people.
Is this an inheritable trait?
No. They most likely not. They it's like a mutation that we don't see passed down yet.
Okay.
So are you looking?
CRISPR it.
Are you?
No, I was wondering. Like, is this the kind of mutation?
Like Tinder profiles that are like six digits only.
Is this evolution happening right in front of our eyes?
It is definitely a mutation that like could potentially. There is no selection pressure that's going to make this sort of propagate down in a way. But I think it's just sort of fascinating. Like we think about ourselves as being sort of a highly evolved sort of specimen. I just like this story. And also, I think the neuroplasticity part is super weird.
Soapbox!
Soapbox or Bodie McBoatface?
I don't know. Whatever you want, soapbox. Man. It's soapbox. Your segment.
Soapbox. All right.
So what I really care about, like I talk about science on the show a bunch. I talk about science elsewhere.
Yeah.
The thing that really matters to me, and it has been this way for more than a decade, is not about like being out there as a science communicator. There's always been better people than me doing that work. There always will be. But what has mattered to me is like how that science communication actually fits in the greater context of society. Today, the Wellcome Institute, which is a foundation based in the UK, released a report where they collaborated with Gallup, where they surveyed 140,000 people across 140 countries about how they feel and perceive science in their own towns. And one of the key indicators they're looking at is trust in science and trust in scientists, which is an indicator I've sort of like dedicated my life towards. Because I see like the real positive outputs of science impacting society. And when you delve into this report, which I think is a good read for any nerd, you see some like really meaningful outputs here. It's, when trust in science is high, we see people that are more likely to follow certain types of health advice. Their quality of life tends to go up. And there's a lot of discussion about people that don't trust science, like whether it's people that aren't vaccinating, whether there's like an anti-science, quote unquote, agenda out there. And this report across 140 countries really shone a light on what that actually looks like. There isn't really this group that is anti-science, or if there is, they're very few. Most of the people that actually have diminished trust in science have a high degree of economic insecurity in their life, or they have a high degree of distrust for government for very good reasons. We see that in Brazil. We see it in Iran. We see it in Korea. We see it in like all these regions mm-hmm. that they looked at pretty consistently. And most of like science communication tends to speak to people that are already kind of interested in science for the most part. Like I kind of imagine that most of the people that are listening to this podcast probably are kind of into science already. That's cool. I love it. But it tells us, like, if we really want to make a difference for people, like, especially people that are making health choices in their lives that are going to affect, like, real meaningful outcomes for them, we really got to talk to people that are economically insecure. And, like, more science communication, more science engagement, where we listen to those people, has to be incorporated in a more strategic way. This report, like, really shifted my opinion on, like, who really needs this at this point, who really needs access to scientific information, and who really needs to have that done on their terms. Last thing I'll highlight is they looked at gender disparity in science. And one of the things that they found is that men tend to have a lot more confidence in science knowledge than women, when you control for, like, the same degree of education. And this is across the board, every country, every region. And what that tends to result in is men tend to explore science and, like, find more scientific information, like, to a much higher degree than women counterparts in every single country they surveyed. That's not just, like, a developing nation issue. It's not, like, every single country. And that gap was somewhere between, like, 6 and 10 points. That is, like, a massive gender disparity that is across the board about women just not being either encouraged, like, there could be a million different, like, not being encouraged to pursue scientific knowledge, systemic issues that are not allowing to encourage. This is, like, massive quality of life issues. And it also limits the progress of scientific research by limiting the sort of, like, human and mental capital that's coming into the field. This is, like, sort of, like, the challenge of our time. Like, when I saw that data this morning, I was up at 5 a.m, like, seeing the unveil of this report. I almost, like, kind of started crying because, like, this is it. This is the data's in front of us of people from all walks of life. And they're showing us. And they're showing us how the systemic issues about how their economic situation, their cultural situation, are limiting their ability to really benefit from the value that science brings to them. That is not a delightful soapbox, but is a soapbox that will die.
If it makes you feel any better, my daughter has always loved Doc McStuffins. And,
what?
And she just did a report on Mae Jemison.
Mae Jemison actually was at this panel this morning that unveiled this report.
Wow. She's been on Star Trek.
Yes, she has been.
Actually,
my friend, welcome, like, when he tweeted a picture of Mae Jemison, like, quoting Maya Angelou about the need to listen to people, he, like, wrote in parentheses, like, she was also on Star Trek. So,
and I love
nerds abound.
On Savage Builds, I hope this is a continuing motif. I love that there are women in the workshop.
Yeah, I think representation is a start, but I think the data tells me there's something more that we have to do. It's not,
but to the extent that it's systemic and societal, I think just getting those examples out there is a great step.
If I have any, like, legacy that I can leave on this planet, is, like, I want to see those numbers shift in my lifetime. I want to see them shift in a big way, because if they do, that means, like, the progress we'll have made in science is going to be untold. All right, happier things. Even though I find that just totally energizing, Bodie McBoatface. We made fun of this name, even though the UK Research Council, who said, like, they weren't actually going to give the boat this name, laughed it off. It was named for this boat that was going to go out and measure sort of surface sea temperatures. Well, Bodie McBoatface, even though it's not called that, came back with the results of its study. It was examining wind patterns and how those wind patterns are affecting global sea temperatures. Oh, it's terrible news. Oh, Bodie McBoatface
brings bad news, a bearer of bad news.
It found that there is an acceleration of temperature change, that, and there's some current patterns that indicate that warming is accelerating. Woo! Bodie McBoatface!
Woo-hoo! Bodie McSad, boat sad face.
You know, we made fun of that name. You know, the reason it's getting all these headlines, this study's getting headlines, is that it was Bodie McBoatface.
Yep.
But it came back with this, like, super serious result. So
great.
I'm all for these ridiculous names because it kind of cuts through the noise. This is, like, an important finding, and now we're talking about it.
The thing that cuts through the noise is internet humor.
Cats.
That's the saddest thing.
Levity.
Yeah.
Should we talk about this moon thing? You want to talk about it?
Yes.
Oh.
What?
You're saying that because you didn't pick it.
No, no. I'm asking if you would like to talk about
it. Oh, let's do it. I don't know anything about it. I saw there was a science story, and I was going to research it in case you weren't coming on, and I didn't. But it looks like there's a big mass. There's a big something massive beneath the moon's surface that we didn't know was there.
What was the movie where we kind of saw the animation of like of the moon kind of splitting off from the Earth via collision? There's like a famous kind of movie, and like early in the movie,
because that's the theory of how the moon got there.
Not theory. We just know that's how it worked, right? So like
everyone knows that.
But yeah. Come on. This is where his eyes start darting back and forth, by the way. Like, this moment. But we know the moon's been hit with a ton of asteroids over time.
Yeah.
What they're showing is based off of essentially, like, kind of a heat mapping. It's sort of a LIDAR under the surface kind of detection. They found an object embedded under the crust of the moon, which means it was, like, an extraordinary impact that must have happened. That left some sort of crater, but some of those have been covered up by other impacts over time. But now there's this, just under the surface, like another object that's just embedded in the moon.
Object, like could
like
be
an asteroid.
Could be a transformer.
Oh, just... I mean, it could be. I'm not saying it's not.
Right, exactly.
But it's not.
But it's something that is not of this Earth and not of that moon?
No, it has to be like some sort of asteroid. And it's enormous. Like, what did they say it was? 4.8 quintillion pounds.
Jeez.
That's a number I don't understand.
No.
I don't know how many zeros that is.
Yeah.
Let's see. It is.
Hey, 2024, man.
6, 12, 15.
Let's get back up there and take a look.
It's 17 zeros.
All right.
That's a lot. That's a lot of poundage. That's not even metric. So many zeros are there.
Do they know what it's composed of?
Some asteroid. Rock.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, like, they think the impact must have happened about 4 billion years ago.
Okay.
There's a lot we don't know about the moon yet.
Hey, science is back.
Yeah. Is that it for Moment of Science?
Oh.
Good moment. Thank you, Kishore.
Yeah, let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it again sometime.
The VR Minute. Virtual reality this week.
Oh boy. Speaking of people of certain socioeconomic means. Wait, what? People who buy VR headsets. This is not exactly people who are, you know, struggling.
I'm going to give him a C- for that transition.
Yeah, that was not very good. I would call that a poor segue.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, it might have been negative and, like, you know, not real good.
It didn't have a point.
Didn't?
No.
I mean, I like VR. It's all good.
We all like VR.
All right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Last week we talked about the controversy that was brewing in the virtual reality community, specifically around Oculus Quest and the restrictions and kind of the guidelines that Facebook Oculus have created about app developers, and especially there are some specific examples from To the Top to Pavlov VR to
Climby
and
Jet Island,
To the Top, that was the most notable one. Virtual Desktop, of course, about whether they could publish on the store or
Virtual Desktop was about the feature that they included,
or the feature that they were asked to pull back,
and
what that meant. And you know, we had our say about it. You can listen to last week, but Oculus, you know, they actually came out and had Jason Rubin address each of these circumstances and talk about their perspective.
I was impressed by he could have come out and made a very generic, you know, give us time, we have a standard that we're trying to uphold, generic kind of overarching excuse. But he came out and he specifically addressed each of these games. And I thought that was great. I thought that was very transparent of him.
Well, let's talk about the actual responses and the circumstances around each game. And at the end, we can talk about whether this is reasonable or we still think there's much to go. Like, overarchingly, you know, he acknowledges that this is this platform, it's early, they're learning, And you know, I think this is talking specifically about virtual desktop. They said disruptive new features landing without notice don't give them time to contemplate safety, comfort, and platform ramifications. Notice platform ramifications, that probably means sales numbers and app sales. They don't review the updates, but they do ask that devs work with them on major changes, compatibility changes.
Let them know, launch.
So specifically, let's ask for...
So he's saying that virtual desktop should not have included that feature without running it by them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because they do their approvals for the app releases.
They could have avoided all of this.
Not at the updates, which sounds like a bandwidth problem, right? Like,
you mean a personnel problem.
Personnel problem, you know, and if they're going to create these guidelines, like there's literally nothing stopping for a developer from releasing something and then that's approved. And then updating it and making it completely different. So that's just fundamentally, this is like, if you're building a walled garden, that's you know kind of the business you're in. And
but
that's the reality you have.
iOS has always had this issue where they get apps that are, you know, perfectly legit. And then they embed an emulator, a Super Nintendo emulator in one of the updates. And it goes out and people discover it. And then it gets taken down.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very similar in that regard, but probably don't have as big an app review team as,
as Apple.
Does. Apple does. So, okay, to the top. The Jason Rubin says they apologized for falling short with a few devs that they sent Quest dev units to before they had settled on their curation process. So this is the example where to the top, the dev got a dev kit, which means presumably it was approved to begin work on, and the assumption was that this would get, you know, go through the formal process and got early hardware, but then the rules for what could and could not be in the store were determined after the fact, and they're not going to move back. They're not going to change the rules. It was just, sorry, you don't make it now.
Yep.
You didn't make it. We should let you know ahead of time before you put more work into it. That's a bummer. It still doesn't change the fact that To the Top has been approved for all sorts of other platforms, including PSVR, and it hasn't affected experience there, right? It hasn't taken down the comfort of PSVR. Virtual Desktop, they said they asked them to roll back the update because of new features through user complaints. So this is tricky. We found out about the new features through user complaints, and it took us a while to get it to work.
Yeah, and I can understand that because it does take a little bit longer to get everything working than it would if you had native hardware.
But just getting... The theory here is that the problem with this update in terms of how it affected the platform was that people were complaining to Oculus...
Well, that's how they're framing this.
People were complaining to Oculus about a feature that was not advertised, that was only kind of shared within a very hardcore VR sub-community.
I think this is suspect. I'm not entirely convinced that anybody complained to Oculus about this.
Right? Like, I heard you could do Steam. I have Steam VR set up.
Yeah.
I heard you could do Steam.
Yeah.
I heard it down in some subreddit. Oh, no, it's harder to get set up than... Then I realize I'm complaining it's Oculus's fault. I don't think that's the case.
That said, I would imagine that the way it could have gone down is people internally tried it and found the experience to be less than optimal, which it is.
It is, but it's also, it wasn't advertised. They went in knowing that this was an experimental
Well, they probably
feature.
Read about it on Reddit like everybody else, and then they went in and tried it. And they realized that setting up Steam VR within Oculus, the Quest context, is not really great.
And your experience will depend on your wireless connection in your house, router setup, and all
that. It's never going to be up to their standards of whatever the 8 milliseconds motions to photons is that the Quest is capable of. It's probably less than that. But given the transmission over Wi-Fi, the encoding, decoding, it might be imperceptible to you, even to your naked eye, but I don't think it's imperceptible to your lizard brain, and they're not going to be happy with that.
So they're making a stance saying this was not a platform consideration. This was about comfort, safety, and quality of experience.
That's the fact that
this unpublicized experimental feature for the people who did not have the proper setup for it, or you know the optimal setup for it,
right.
It put it in the category of hurt the consistency of experience on Quest.
Yes. Now, on the other hand, they have allowed... is it the developer's name Guy or Guy?
I think Guy.
They've allowed him and everyone else to provide apps that you can sideload that add this functionality, and they're not saying anything about that.
Yeah.
You do, and it's gotten so simple to do that with SideQuest that I'm kind of, I'm now on board with that solution, because they could try to do what Apple does and completely block that out.
Yes. And to their credit, absolutely. I think that is the right, that's the right thing to do. I just think that as much credit as we're going to give them for addressing all these things, like, these are still very carefully chosen words, and they still dance around the topic, what it all comes down to.
Yeah. I am also encouraged by the fact that Jason has said, I don't know if he says it in this tweet thread, but he said that until they can figure out a way to do it that satisfies their requirements for user experience, they're not going to allow it to exist on the store. So that just tells me they are continuing to work on it, and I hope that they do have a system in place eventually that... I told you last week, I was not comfortable using... I got my motion sickness from playing Beat Saber over using Virtual Desktop, Steam VR, and if Oculus can find a way to play PC games stream to Quest... Great.
Yeah, yeah. And who knows if they're actually working on that. The other responses they have, he has to, like, Jet Island and Pavlov, I think are more reasonable. That was clarifying, for example, offering support for compatibility, never hearing back. So that's the other side of the story. And also for Pavlov, I think that is an amicable ending where the developer is moving forward and getting support to put it on Quest. And so that's good.
And to be clear, the two that I mentioned last week, Climby and To the Top, those I saw those developers respond to the To the Top fiasco. They were in the threads talking about that issue and saying that if you weren't allowed in the store, I'm giving up. And I in those commentaries, I encourage them not to, because I love those games and I want to see them on Quest. And I'm glad to see that Oculus is open to talking to them.
Yeah, and as long as the rules are consistent and developers aren't putting a ton of work in and then being closed to publishing for no good reason, you know, then it's okay. And again, the sideloading thing, for experimental features, I completely agree. It's obviously not a market. It's not going to be making money for devs who need to get paid for their time.
I wonder if those guys will add some sort of a way to pay for games on SideQuest.
I think the moment that happens, then Oculus would shut it down.
I wonder.
Because then it is something that affects
their another store.
Yeah,
but it's money that they left on the table. Everything on SideQuest, at least currently, by design, is things that you can't get on the Oculus store, that Oculus has said no thank you to. But maybe you're right. Maybe people would prefer to be on the SideQuest store if there was a better revenue share.
I mean, I think I said it last week. I think some of this stuff could be market-driven, right? Like, if people are buying these things in mass and there was a huge market for it, which on the desktop side, that's how something like... PUBG got its start, right?
Yeah.
Launching and kind of open early access, people paying full price for it, building community. And then even though, you know, early on full of bugs, it became the phenomenon that it was. And on the VR side, something like Onward, right? It isn't fully polished, but enough of the network effects have made it a successful thing. Why not, right? It's obviously the community, right? Like... And the curation on the store, right? Like, what's surfaced, right? Like, for people, new users, for your mom and dad who are jumping in, it doesn't have to be front and center Onward or whatever, you know, experimental VR, less comfortable VR. Because even within the acceptable VR experiences, there's a range of comfort and a range of quality, to be honest.
I'm having a hard time imagining a scenario where I'd rather be on SideQuest than the Oculus store. But maybe one day. I don't know.
Okay, off of Quest, into Rec Room, and non-VR news, I guess. Rec Room has an iOS beta.
Why not? They're on every other flat screen.
Every other flat screen.
Yeah, so you can sign up now. Go to the Rec Room Twitter, has a link, and you can go sign up to play Rec Room on your phone.
You can get your Quest fix without a headset.
I wonder, how do you play it with touchscreen? Everything? Does it use...
It's going to be a swarm. I just imagine, like, the lobbies are going to be full.
I wonder what it plays like. I hadn't considered even trying it.
I mean, do you think that they should implement a way so that when you jump in, you can say, I want to be in a VR, like, not individual side quest, but VR gym only?
Well, you can join the specific activities as VR only.
I know, not the activity, not the quest, not the minigames, but the main lobby.
There's no main lobby.
That's rough.
But they're changing that. They've talked about a new setup where they're going to have clubhouses where you can set up your own clubhouse and have it be the way that you want, and then it would only be the type of people that you want to play with or allowed in there.
Whoa. Don't say type of people. I think a VR chat does it, it works around that with every instant having a unique identifier. I can say I want to jump into gym, main hub number, this number. And all my friends can type that in. Because the biggest problem we have with Rec Room is trying to get into the main gym together because they fill up so quickly.
Oh, that's not my biggest problem.
Well, one of the problems we have getting started.
Yeah.
Or his eyes start darting back and forth.
Hey.
But on the subject of my biggest problem, there's a new game from that game company coming out next month called, I think it's Sky. You know, the guys who made Journey and Flower.
Okay.
And it's another game kind of like Journey. And I guess there's a social component to it, and they've struggled with how do you get people to play together and not antagonize one another or not, you know, troll.
Yeah.
And, like, that's so much of what happens in Rec Room. And whether it's just kids being kids or whether it's racists or what have you, like, it's not all the time, but it's frequent enough that it's become, like, that my experience of Rec Room is tainted with that. And I just want to go in and play with you guys in private rooms. And the guys who game company have an interesting solution where I guess there's some kind of, it's a free to play, so there's some kind of in-game currency, and the only way that you somehow get currency by interacting with other players, but the other players are only allowed to chat with you if you've sort of
built up a reputation,
formed a relationship with using emojis to begin with. And so you can't run up and you can't, there's no VoIP. Like, you can't hear people right away. You can't,
but it's not even the voice. It's just the physical banging into you and throwing their hands in your face.
I wonder how much
gestures
of that. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much of that you can do without actually being friends. But I think that there's something there. I think that, like, the concept of having to forge a relationship before they become a full fledged communicator, there's something to that. That's an interesting concept. I'd like to see thought through by other
games. Well, I think there are great examples in past MMOs and past multiplayer experiences where they can make a business of creating, you know, private servers. You know, if a group wants to create their clubhouse and pay for server time and let their community members, like if Tested wanted to do a, here's, you know, it, Tested fans and communities can jump in only with this password or because you're verified in a certain way. Then that becomes an opportunity for them to create a side business out of that.
Yeah, sure. Right.
But I think they're still probably a little ways away from that. I think there aren't enough overall users out there. They want to populate these rooms, and maybe that's why they're on these 16x9 platforms.
I wonder.
Hey, remember that Mario Kart VR that we saw in Japan, the video that went viral?
Yep.
It's coming to Irvine, to Southern California.
Take me to it.
I know. It's going to be at an arcade. This is a licensed game, and it's going to be at the VR Zone Portal starting now. Yeah, it's at the K1 Speed Entertainment Center.
Why aren't we
there? Yeah, why aren't we not in a car?
I know.
Let's go.
Well, I'm serious. Let's go.
If anyone's in Southern California, go and send us pictures of the experience. Tell us how it was.
Oh, this isn't South Bay. This is Southern California.
Southern California, exactly. So I think Bandai Namco makes this version of it. People wear Vives. I think there are hand controllers as well. And apparently, it's a platform because you're in this kind of go-kart simulator, but Mario Kart's just one of the games. There's also this game called Argyle Shift and Ski Rodeo.
It's
LBE that you can choose which type of seated racing game, VR racing game you want. But yeah, I think we all want
Mario Kart.
If somebody gets in there ahead of you and there's like a line for this and you watch them playing Ski Rodeo, your head will explode.
Maybe they already did Mario Kart. You know, maybe they're trying it all. Yeah. You remember, you can't fathom why you would play anything but Mario Kart.
No, I can't.
Do you remember that game I reviewed, or previewed rather, on Projections a couple weeks ago called Battle Wave?
Yeah, you played at GDC. This is from Servios.
I said there's no way this is coming to Quest.
Because you said the graphics look so good.
Guess what? It's coming to Quest.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's no surprise because they have two Quest titles already.
Creed.
And Electronauts. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, good for them. It's I look forward to playing it on Quest now, probably, because that's going to be the least friction. And PSVR it's coming to. It's a good-looking game. It's a pirate game, kind of a deathmatchy, where you control a boat, and you can. It's really impressive graphics.
Hey, the VR Awards 2019 finalists were announced. This is going to be done. Let me see if I got the...
Were you guys nominated for best VR coverage?
No. No.
We weren't?
No.
It was an honor to even be considered.
I give up.
It's an annual nonprofit event, and it's through AIXR. It's going to be November 11th, so end of this year. They've been running for the past couple of years. I think it's, is this a UK based one? UK or, the AXR is, the Academy of International Extended Reality that runs the annual, VR awards. Okay. They have a great logo. But the finalists for content was announced. So I wanted to run them through us. We're not on the judges. There's 80 expert judges, but we're not judging.
Go quick, because I got a bail.
I know. Oh, I'm sorry. Hardware of the year. Quest, Rift S, Vive Pro I, Reverb, Tesla suit, or the XL5K HMD? Okay.
Quest, next question.
Okay. VR game of the year. I agree with you as well, if I was to vote. VR game of the year. Astrobot, Hellblade, Shadow Point, Blood and Truth, Vacation Sim, Falcon Age, Transpose, Firewall Zero Hour, which is the PSVR Counter-Strike game, Creed Rise to Glory, Free Diver,
how about that?
Angry Birds, Fishman's Tale.
Angry Birds? Come on.
And Pro's Enlightenment. I've played all but one of these, all but one or two of these.
If I had to give it to one right now, I'd say Astrobot.
Yep, me too. That was my gut as well. Although... Yeah, I think between those, I give a special mention to Blood and Truth, but that's for another
I haven't played many of these VR experiences, so I'm not going to weigh in on that one.
Okay, VR experiences, Vader Immortal. NBC has one called 1111. Start VR is something called Awake.
We don't have to do all these.
Yeah, all right. I think VR Immortal is probably a shoo-in for that one. And then there's VR films and VR companies of the year.
VR marketing of the year.
I know.
How about that?
Educational stuff. It's always great. I love this finalist list because it shows there's a lot of stuff out there right now in VR. Not just in games. There's stuff in healthcare, stuff in education.
Look at all these LBE ones, too.
Yeah. And it gives me a good list of things to start exploring for projections. But November 11th.
All right. No VR Journalism Awards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next year, guys. Next year.
Yeah. And I think, is that our last story? Do we have one more story?
No, nope. We got to go. He's got to go.
We got to go. Thank you so much, Kishore.
Thank you, Kishore.
For joining us this week.
Really good to see you.
Yeah.
I'm glad
I want to get to a point where I can stop thanking you.
Oh.
Because then you just be back on and not feel like a special guest.
Yeah. I won't be here next week. I like being thanked.
Thanks for letting us know ahead of time. We got an outro this week, Jeremy?
We do, from Jesse is from Earth. Wohawk.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Tested.
We are all sweet quiche. Just sweet quiche.
Have you ever
parallel had, dimensions?
Have you ever had sweet quiche?
I didn't know if that was a thing that
it's
really
not good.
Existed.
Is it a thing that existed? Good. No, my grandfather used to make a quiche, and he would just take whatever he found in the fridge. And one time he made it with berries and like fruit, and it was really, really gross, like super duper bad.
All right, question answered.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, maybe somebody makes a good sweet quiche. Well,
quince.
Quince pie.
We propose. Quiche, with parentheses, sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see if they go with that. So.
It was probably Gary.
Yeah, maybe.
That's it.
Wohawk, you made the list.
That was great.